You hit the door, but just don't hit it too hard, because I need to see Elise. She's going to be here any second, so. Alright, I guess not. Alright. So it is time. 12:15. See, I knew you were going to be here. I saw you coming across the parking lot. See, I wasn't lying. Was it like ice cream day? You got ice cream? You got like an ice cream?
Nah.
Oh.
I serve it in the cafeteria every day.
Oh. Gotcha. Can't go wrong with ice cream. Alright, so we have this guy called Bismarck. Bismarck is the Iron Chancellor of Russia. Bismarck uses his position to make Germany. Then he becomes Chancellor of the Second Reich, the German Empire. But in order to preserve the German Empire, he switches from using war to diplomacy. And one of the things he realized was the layout of the map. His goals, of course, was to keep France all by itself, so it had no allies, and to prevent a war between Austria and Hungary. Austria-Hungary and Russia. Because he knew that if either situation went off the rails, Germany would be in trouble. Why? France wanted its revenge for the Franco-Prussian War, and we saw the huge border that Austria and Russia shared with Germany. So Bismarck was determined to try to hold all of Europe together. And he did so for a few years with the Three Emperors League, but Austria kind of screwed Russia over, and that made Russia mad, so Russia bailed. That's where we left off. The problem was this. As a result of what took place at the Congress of Berlin, where Austria got Bosnia and Herzegovina, England got Cyprus, and Russia basically got rolled over, was that now Bismarck's peace, wanting to let the glue dry, was threatened by two possibilities. The first was the fact that Bosnia and Herzegovina, which Austria now can occupy, was coveted by Serbia. Right there. What's the big deal? Well, traditionally, ethnically, historically, the Bosnians, the Herzegovinians, and the Serbs are all the same basic racial group. They are all Slavs. Serbia, as an independent country, winning its independence, demanded from the Congress of Berlin the right to annex Bosnia and Herzegovina, saying that traditionally is our people. So should we not put the same race together into a pan-Serbian country? But what happens when two nations want the same thing? Potential war. And if a war broke out in the Balkans, it could escalate. Problem number two, if this situation escalated, Russia might get involved out of its desire to seek revenge against Austria. So go back to what I said before about that huge border. If said war erupts, Germany will get dragged in. And if Germany gets dragged in, the German Empire could be shattered. While Bismarck could afford to ignore the whole Bosnia-Herzegovina-Serbia thing, he could not afford to ignore the situation between Austria and Russia. So Bismarck, being Bismarck, needed to move. And what does he do? Well, 1879, he makes a secret treaty with Austria-Hungary. This would be a unilateral agreement, an agreement between two nations. But here's the thing. This would be a defensive treaty. But Bismarck, being Bismarck, did not release the fact that the intent was to be defensive. Because when you see one country making an alliance with another one, that kind of implies they're joining together in all things. This system that would be created would be known as the dual alliance. Very simply, if either Germany or Austria is attacked by Russia, then other will join the war. But if Germany or Austria attacked by anyone else, then neutrality. Now notice how I phrased it. I phrased it based on the language of the treaty. If Germany or Austria is attacked, it doesn't say if Germany or Austria attacks somebody else. This is only if they are attacked. Now here's the funny thing. This was a secret treaty. It was not announced. But magically, a copy of it ended up in the Tsar's hands. Go figure. And then once Bismarck started hearing rumblings in Russia, he then reached out to the Chancellor of Austria and basically told them, Germany is never going to get involved in your Balkan politics. In other words, if a war erupts between Austria and Serbia, Germany's not getting involved. The Austrian Chancellor replied, well, what if Russia jumps in? Bismarck replied, Germany will never attack Russia. So what Bismarck is telling the Austrians, if you get into a war with Serbia, and even if Russia gets involved, you're on your own. That's a subtle way of saying, don't be dumb. Don't trigger a war in the Balkans. Because if you do, you'll get destroyed. Of course, those details remain classified until the 1960s. All Russia knows is that suddenly Austria and Germany have an alliance, even though they had fought a war back in 1866. Go figure. Realpolitik. Now, what is this Austro-Hungarian Empire that I keep talking about? Well, let's give you a little backstory. The Austro-Hungarian Empire is a weird anomaly in European politics in the 19th century. It was not a country, but it was an empire. And it was an empire fused together, involving multiple ethnic groups. Which makes it, technically speaking, a supranationalist empire. It was comprised of Austrians, who are Germans, Hungarians, who are Hungarians, but it also had Czechs, it also had Slovaks, it also had Poles, it had Ukrainians, it had Romanians, it had Croats and Serbs and Bosnians. Heck, it also had, I said Romanians, it also had some Italians in it. It was a hodgepodge. But here's the kicker. The Germans and the Hungarians made a deal. These two ethnic groups would control all of the other minorities. They had all the rights, they had all the other privileges. And to hold it together, they would implement what we would consider to be a police state. Rebellion was constant. But the German/Austrian and Hungarian forces constantly mobilized and crushed the rebellions. But of course, the problem is the more force they used to crush the rebellions, the more resistance was triggered. And as the Austrians would discover, one of the primary instigators of the tensions were the Serbians. Because they were trying to get the Croats and the Serbian peoples in Bosnia and Herzegovina, as well as the Romanians and some of the other ethnic groups, to essentially to rise up, rebel, break away, and declare their independence. Because if Serbia could pinch all of this land, Serbia could make a huge empire. This essentially meant that the only way for Austria and Hungary to maintain their empire was essentially to destroy the Serbians. Well, complicating their existence was the fact, there we go, Greater Serbia. Complicating their existence was the fact that Russia was also Slavic in nature. Just as Serbia dreamed of breaking away these lands, Russia, which is right up here, dreamed of breaking away the Polish peoples, the Ukrainians, and taking a big bite out of this corner of the empire. And heck, if Russia was really successful, it could also come into the Balkans because it wants that warm water port. So it could take a bite out of the north, it could take a bite out of the south, and Russia could unify all of the Slavic peoples. So as a consequence to its very design, the government in Vienna, which is where the capital was, literally believed that it was in a literal life or death struggle. That even the smallest threats could be catastrophic and thus had to be crushed. So, they had a military. Their military was active. And, to a degree, somewhat capable.
And now this country makes an alliance with Germany. Germany, which has the biggest economy on the continent, thanks to unification, has the biggest military, thanks to unification. As Russia sees this play out,
and now sees this alliance, the Tsar is terrified of what could happen. Because now that Austria has a friend, maybe Austria is going to start getting more aggressive. And trust me, Russia had its own problems, which we'll talk about. Ultimately, as the Tsar and all his military planners tried mapping out all of the what-if possibilities, in the end, the Tsar contemplated coming back into the Three Emperors League. But he was hesitant. And then he was killed. While riding in his coach in St. Petersburg, a bunch of anarchists managed to get close to the carriage and throw grenades underneath it, causing him to get blown up. And when the Tsar died, his son Alexander III succeeded him. And Alexander III kind of did the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Who's a worse threat? These anarchists or the Germans? So upon the death of Alexander II, Alexander III rejoined the Three Emperors League. And the Three Emperors League would last until 1887. Questions?
What year was the secret treaty?
1879.
You want to see what kind of a nerd I am? All right, it was a 5-year treaty under the terms, so it would last until 1888, and it was renewed every single year all the way up until World War I. Or is that too much details? All right. Any other questions?
Well, all of the other nations on Europe are seeing what Bismarck's doing, and they're just amazed. Again, four-dimensional chess. He's moving in directions and weaving in directions that nobody could see. And by the way, to add to my analogy that I gave you on Tuesday, Trump, what did he do yesterday? But did he end all the tariffs?
Not with China. Not China.
That's it?
Well, they just got lowered.
He left all of the tariffs in place. Except for the, well, he did lower some. But now all of the countries we do business had tariffs. You know how many of those countries had had tariffs against before? None. So everyone's sitting back saying, Trump gave up, Trump gave up. No, he didn't. He actually imposed 10% tariffs on all of our trading partners. The world is paying attention to what he's doing with China. But who is jacking the tariffs up? China moved first. Trump reacts. China reacts. Who's the bad guy? It's not Trump. It's China. Trump wants to negotiate. 74 nations came forward to negotiate with him. Everyone's watching Trump's hand over here, and they're not watching what he's doing down here. 10% tariffs on all trade is going to raise our income for the national government to levels we've never seen before. And we might actually be able to start paying down debt. And once he works out these other deals, he's going to have a major mic drop. It's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like Bismarck. Why do I mention that? Well, one of the nations that was sitting there watching what was going on was Italy. Now, we don't have time to really get into the backstory of Italy, but 1871, 4 months after Germany is unified, Italy becomes a country. Italy is unified. Italy previously had been 14 separate states. But in 1871, they become a country, and they're looking around for some support. Why? Well, very simple. Going back to the Congress of Berlin, I kind of slipped it through, but at the conference, France took Tunisia. Tunisia being in North Africa. Guess who had Libya right next door? Italy. The Italians are like, if France sweeps across North Africa, they're going to be a threat to our territory. So we need a friend. What do? King Umberto I, his government reaches out to Bismarck, and they bring Italy in. The dual alliance becomes a triple alliance. If Germany or Italy attacked by France, other join. But if Germany or Italy attacked by anyone else, then neutral. France is all by itself. Bismarck has an alliance with Germany, Austria, Italy. Plus, it has an alliance with Germany, Austria, Russia. Bismarck literally is playing 4D chess when the rest of the world is barely playing checkers. You want to see it visually? There you go. Triple Alliance, Three Emperors League. France is all by itself. Through defensive treaties, Bismarck can guarantee that Germany is never going to get dragged into a war if it doesn't want to. It is the master. But which great power am I ignoring? Great Britain. Why do you think I'm ignoring Great Britain? Going back to the post-Napoleonic War years, England stopped paying attention to what was going on in the continent because England is focused on building its global empire. We talked about it. They're going into and conquering India. They're trying to push into China. They're down in South Africa. They're working on Egypt. They got so many things going on globally. They don't care what's going on in Europe. Why? Well, England embraced what the British themselves referred to as splendid isolationism. Look at everywhere on earth England was in the 1880s. They had no time to worry about France's hurt feelings. Plus, England hated France. England fought more wars with France than even Germany did. So, Bismarck's maintaining peace. Why should England care? Checkmate. Checkmate. He is has his hands. He's like, I'll give you another visual. Crap.
Twister. Any of you ever play Twister?
Yeah.
Bismarck literally has hands and feet on just about every single color dot on the board. He's controlling everything. And nobody can move without Bismarck moving first.
Brilliant. Questions? France is still alone. Gotta throw that in. Gotta rub it in on the French.
But there is a problem. The problem is nothing lasts forever. Most of you, I am assuming, are like 18 or 19 years old. Well, come back and talk to me in 5 years and tell me where you're at. I'm sure you'll be in a very different position than you are now. I'm sure your life will be very different. I'm sure your attitudes will be very different. Because people change over time. Well, lo and behold, the game of controlling everything, which Bismarck had in 1882, suddenly began to change 5 years down the road. Why? Well, the Three Emperors League would be blown apart. As we are going to see, tensions would erupt again in the Balkans. Austria and Russia once again appeared to be on the brink of a war in the Balkans, and somehow Austria got the best of Russia again. Russia contacts Bismarck. And Bismarck's like, it's not my problem. So Tsar Alexander III gets angry and leaves. But Bismarck moved quickly. Within weeks of Russia bailing on the Three Emperors League, Bismarck secretly negotiates what is known as the reinsurance treaty. We all know what insurance is. Well, let's re-up it. This, too, was a secret treaty. Can I erase these? Everyone wrote those details down. Because of how the boards and how world politics is changing, the terms of the reinsurance treaty was a little different than either the dual alliance or the triple alliance. This too was a secret treaty, but here's how it worked out. Actually, I should say other neutral, I suppose is the best way to say it. So in the reinsurance treaty, Germany and Russia would basically stay out of a war if the other went to a war with a great power. Who's a great power? England, France, Germany, Austria, Italy, Russia, Japan, the United States. So, if Russia goes to war with Austria, Germany is going to declare neutrality.
But, and there's a big but. If Germany attacks France, or if Russia attacks Austria, Germany goes on the offensive and attacks France, or if Russia goes on the offensive and attacks Austria, the other country doesn't have to be neutral, and they have the right to switch sides. Because maybe Russia was acting like asses. Well, if Russia gets aggressive and tries conquering Austria, well, Germany has a right to protect its interest, so it has a right to go to war with Russia in that instance. Just like if Germany goes on the offensive and attacks France. Was this the perfect solution? Yeah. Because you think Bismarck's going to start a war with France again? And even if a war does erupt between Germany and France, you think Bismarck's dumb enough to make it look like Germany is the aggressor? M's telegram. We've already seen his abilities. And. Is Russia dumb enough to go to war with Austria? No. And how do I know this? Well, in addition to these terms, Germany promised increase levels of trade with Russia. To make it simple, guns for wheat. The Russian army does not have enough firearms for every single man in their army.
Hold of the Tsar, and he's holding them tight. At the same time, on the other side, he's holding Austria and Italy tight. He's using his foot to keep England way out there, and he's got his other foot on the throat of France.
He had to reposition, but once again, he controls the board.
Question.
Then something happened that he couldn't control. Death. On March 9th, 1888, Bismarck's ability to have absolute control over domestic and foreign policy in Germany was shattered when the Kaiser died. March 9th, 1888, at the age of 90, Wilhelm I would die. Just like all of you are going to die one day. And when you die, everything that you are ceases to be. Because you can't take it with you. Hate to break it to you. Even if you become the emperor,
But we already know what happens when an emperor dies, right? This is succession. And fortunately, Wilhelm did his kingly duty, and he sired an heir. Frederick. Now, FYI, he would be known only as Frederick III because he never was coronated as Kaiser. He was Frederick III of Prussia.
Now, what's the problem with Freddy Boy? Well, he was raised in the Prussian militaristic system. He was raised as a Junker, but he had a critical change of opinion. He believed in the nobility. He believed in the crown. He believed in militarism. Until he actually fought in a war. He led men in the Franco-Prussian War. And he saw what happens when young men go into battle. War is real. There is nothing fun about war. You get shot and your body suffers traumatic injury, leading up to death. And as a commander, and he sees the body bags of his boys are coming back from the front, he realized this is stupid. So his politics changed from being a monarchist trying to get an absolutist police state to a classical liberal. He started reading the writings of people like Thomas Jefferson. He read about our revolution. He read about our constitution. He read about what was going on in England. England had a monarchy, but it was a constitutional monarchy. People in England and in the United States were citizens. They had rights protected by the constitutions. And then he looked at what was in Germany, and he said, why don't we have that here? So, when he came to the throne, he pretty much lets it be known he wants to change the German system, the system that Bismarck made. And by the way, if this happened, the Chancellor wouldn't have all the power. Parliament would. Because in the British system, it's the Parliament that elects the Prime Minister, not the Crown. Bismarck knew if this system goes into effect, his ability to control everything will be undone. Because now he'll be answerable to the politicians. But you know something, which is really weird? While Bismarck in his diaries mentioned that he was troubled by this, he wasn't concerned. Because 3 days before Wilhelm died, Freddy Boy was diagnosed with throat cancer. Frederick used to smoke cigars non-stop. He chain smoked cigars. And we're not talking about those little tiny little Swisher Sweet things. We're talking the big fat cigars. Cigar after cigar after cigar after cigar. And throat cancer developed. He was crowned King of Prussia upon the death of his father. But he never was able to be crowned Kaiser because about a week after he was crowned king, he went into the hospital for surgery because they didn't have chemotherapy. They dealt with cancer pretty much by cutting your body open and trying cutting it all out. And they butchered it. You
get a severe staph infection in his throat, and he would spend the entirety of his reign lying in bed. And then 99 days after his father, he died. Whew. Bismarck dodges a bullet. Why? Well, Frederick had done his kingly duty. And he had a son who would be crowned King and Kaiser Wilhelm II. Unfortunately for Bismarck, the new Kaiser ultimately would undo Bismarck. Why? Well, let me tell you a little bit about Kaiser Wilhelm II. When he came to the throne, he was 29 years old. He was born in 1863. He was 8 years old when Germany was unified. How many of you remember your thoughts when you were 4 or 5 or 6? Do you think even if you were interested in politics now, you were interested in politics when you were 4 or 5 or 6? No, you were probably playing with toys and having fun being a kid. As Wilhelm came of age, he came of age in Germany. Bismarck's Germany. Great, powerful, majestic. He only knew greatness. He didn't know what it took to build it. He also had Erb's palsy. Does anyone know what Erb's palsy is? Erb's palsy is a handicap where you have complete paralysis in one of your limbs. Because when you're being born, as you pop out of your mother, your body isn't positioned right, and it gets caught up on the inside, and it breaks. As Wilhelm was being popped out of his mother's birth canal, his arm was not at the sides, like how babies are supposed to be born, but apparently it was up. So as a result, as he's being forced in, the baby's bone was shattered. And you can't put a cast on a baby. So as a result of that injury, it never grew correctly. When he became an adult, his arm, his left arm, was withered. It literally was 6 inches shorter than his right. 6 inches, right? That's about 6 inches. Think about what that would look like. So you're talking like about this, right? Give or take. Plus, he did not have full movement. He was paralyzed. He couldn't do anything with it. Just kind of hung there. So imagine being raised as the potential heir to the most powerful empire on earth while you are handicapped. Do you think he had personality issues? Oh, yeah. Plus, he was a mama's boy. Because he was handicapped, his mother spoiled him rotten. So back when I was a kid, I had army men. I had those little green guys, and I think I had the gray guys. I used to have him play war. He had army men, too. He actually had a real unit of the German army. Real men. With real guns. Those were his toys. So when he went out in the back and played war, the soldiers actually fired blanks. Insane. Plus, he was the grandson of Queen Victoria, the monarch of England, who was the most powerful monarch in Western Europe or Western civilization. So he came of age spoiled. Now, he was tutored by Bismarck's son. And Bismarck did everything he could to train the Kaiser, to prepare him for his ascension. Beginning at the age of 20, Wilhelm was actually allowed to sit in on all of Bismarck's foreign policy meetings. So that way he would be more than aware of what was going on. But the problem was, is there is a flaw with people in their youth. You don't know anything because you haven't experienced life. The only things that you know, chances are, have been told to you by somebody else. And that doesn't make it real. Heck, I love watching all you guys watching your little videos on your computers because I can tell you're not even paying attention to me. It's obvious. But imagine if you suddenly had to become Kaiser and you just sat back and thought, ah, the old people, they don't know what they're talking about. Instead of embracing real politic, the Kaiser would embrace the attitude of many of his day, which was commonly referred to as Weltpolitik. He wanted, as this cartoon shows, to take German greatness and apply it globally. Because he wanted Germany's place under the sun, greater than all of the other nations on earth. In pursuing policy, he would combine industry and military to essentially act like a bully, to threaten people to do what he wants, as opposed to real politic, which you do anything, including diplomacy. Real politic, you have to shift your gears constantly, depending on what's going on. Weltpolitik, if you don't do what I want, I'm going to shoot you. Needless to say, the two clashed. Bismarck constantly warned the Kaiser. Look at the board I've set for you. France has no friends. We got Russia tied together with us with the reinsurance treaty. We got the dual alliance between us and Austria. Heck, throw in Italy. We got the triple alliance. And England's not paying attention because we're not saber rattling. The world could be yours in time. Let's just worry about what we got going on in our own country. Well, the Kaiser didn't care. They began fighting over everything, domestic and foreign. And these arguments poisoned their relationship. Which I guess is natural. I am an elected official in my hometown. And I had a colleague who, at times, I actually felt hate for. Because my colleague viewed things differently than I do. And I would catch myself, like, man, I'm really just angry right now at that person. Why? And then I'd have to take a step back. Breathe, Lemanic, breathe. Okay, they just have a different opinion, and it's okay to have a different opinion. But that's hard. It's really hard. If you're pushing something you absolutely believe is right, and you're going against your colleague who believes what they're pushing is absolutely right, and there's no middle ground, there's no compromise, eventually the relationship becomes contaminated. When the Kaiser started referring to Bismarck as the old man, Bismarck lost it. And on May 18th, he quit. He stepped down as chancellor. And he went into retirement. Bismarck set the table, but the Kaiser would screw it up. Questions? So from 1890 all the way up until 1914.
Can you go back, please, fast?
Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome. This little doohickey is just not natural. But I'm getting it down. Look at that. He asked, I was able to do clips. I didn't put my finger on the wrong one. I didn't, for example, hit like the laser and like blind somebody in the eye. No, that was good. All right. So now, Bismarck's Germany becomes Wilhelm's Germany. Oh, by the way, so glad this came. Go back to the Erb's palsy. Look at this picture. Look how long his right arm is. But look at the optical illusion he created in all of the allowed pictures of him. He has his left hand in a white glove, and it's sitting on the pommel of a sword. So a normal person would be like this. Look how far back my elbow is. But look at his. It's almost all the way straight. But if you look at it quick, it looks like he has two normal arms. Nah, he had little use. The way he had described was he could kind of make a fist, but like pull that out of my hand. Yeah, he couldn't grip it, he couldn't hold on.
I see him holding like something there.
Yeah, so what he does is he has his hand, that's the pommel of his sword, so he's looking like he's gripping it, but what he is he has his arm on the pommel holding the glove in place. So basically he's kind of pushing down a little bit as opposed to gripping it. Yeah, he figured that technique out, I think he was 17. All right, so what would he do? Well, I'll be honest with you, I'll be fair, I'll be balanced. His reign is just weird, it makes no sense. The best word that I saw in my sources that I use for this class was one historian just referred to the reign as being incoherent, meaning nonsensical. And the reason being is his reign was a reflection of him. Bless you. Bless you. He was spoiled, which meant he was impatient. He also reacted very, very negatively if someone even questioned him. He also was impulsive. He got emotional. Plus, he didn't like the fact that under the German system, he really was a figurehead. He dreamed of being like Louis XIV. He wished he reigned 200 years ago when he just wasn't on the throne reigning, but he wanted to actually rule. He wanted to be in charge. He wanted to make decrees and issue proclamations and make his country bow down before him. He also is described as having a bipolar personality. Domestically, he spoke the language of German nationalists. He encouraged scientific advancements. He encouraged cultural strides.
He constantly talked about German this and German that. German folk heroes, German, you know, culture, German traditions. He encouraged his people to be prideful of their country. But foreign policy-wise, all of the other... Have you ever seen anyone talk in German? The German language and the way you pronounce the syllables is very harsh. It's very fiery. It seems aggressive. That's just the way they pronounce the words. I'm trying to think of something that I can say that's probably not, can't be interpreted the wrong way. Okay. Ich mache. Lehre dich. I enjoy teaching you. If you don't know German, you're like, what? Lick, dick, what? Huh? What are you saying, Lamanic? Well, see, the problem is whenever he spoke, he only spoke in German. He could read and speak in French. He could read and speak in Latin. He could read and speak in English, but he only spoke in German. So you have these world reporters there, and he's like, pretty much saying, I hope you have a nice day today. But this is getting reported back, and they're like, my God, this guy's insane. Plus, Weltpolitik. He starts making demands that Germany deserves this. Germany is entitled to this. Germany should be allowed to take this. And all of the nations are sitting back saying, whoa, what is going on? Plus, this. Divine right of kings. This was an attitude of the European absolutist monarchs that reigned during the 16 and 1700s. Monarchs who accept this believe that God made them to be king. And if God wants you to be king, what happens if you question the king? You're essentially questioning God. And one of his favorite statements to emphasize this, alles kommt von oben. Everything comes from above. Kaiser, why are you doing this? God wants me to. And are you going to question that? No. But truth be told, there's only one Bismarck. The Kaiser, even though he did receive training, even though he was allowed to sit in on the foreign policy meetings for 9 years before he ascended the throne, he just didn't get it. The biggest mistake that he made was he surrounded himself with yes men. He didn't want any critics. He didn't want anyone to question him. He only wanted people that would sit back and be like, oh, yes, Your Majesty, yes, Your Majesty. And if you question him, you're fired. Consider this. Bismarck was Wilhelm I's chancellor for 25 years. Human beings that are in a relationship for 25 years do have arguments, do have disagreements. But the two manage to figure it out and they stay together as a team. In the first 10 years after Bismarck resigned, from 1890 to 1900, Wilhelm went through four chancellors. And this created a problem. because the Kaiser began making mistakes. Four of which, ultimately, are responsible for setting the world on the road to World War I. Mistake number one. He would allow the reinsurance treaty to lapse. Why? Well, several reasons. The most important of which was the fact that in 1891, I believe, there was a new czar in Russia. Tsar Nicholas II. Nikki's mother was Willie's aunt.
Oh.
And apparently, when the two boys were young, Nikki used to love picking on Willie, because Willie literally could not fight back. So now the Kaiser is emperor, and he recognizes and remembers what his cousin did to him, and he basically thinks the Russians should go pound sand. So he intentionally ordered his chancellor not to renew the deal. Now, here's the catch. Willie was trying to get in better with Grandma, Queen Victoria. Because England and Russia, at the time, new imperialism, they were competing in Asia, they were competing in the Middle East, they were trying to carve up the Ottoman Empire. So Willie had hoped that this would be a good grace for Grandma, Queen Victoria. Look, Grammy, I like you. I don't want to be with my cousin. I'll support you. Possibly bringing England in to the sphere of alliances. But the mistake was made, leaving Russia by itself. And if you are by yourself, surrounded by hostiles, what are you going to try doing?
Escape.
You can't escape your country.
Possibly
attack first, build your army up, get aggressive, and what about looking for friends? Screw up number two. The Kaiser incentivized Russia to try to get friends. Why? Well, in the 1892-1894, communications between Vienna and Berlin started changing their tone. More and more and more, Berlin starts trying to encourage Austria to basically conquer the Balkans. Now, Austria was doing this because it needed to gain more territory after Germany and Italy were created. And we know why, also, the Ottoman Empire was dying. So, the Kaiser is sitting there telling Austria, get aggressive, get aggressive. Oh, by the way, look what we have in our back pocket. If Russia dare attacks, you're going to have Germany and Italy as allies. So now, Russia's by itself. You're pumping up Austria, who's kind of getting aggressive towards Russia. Russia is desperate. How desperate? They're desperate enough to reach out to the French. I know, it's like, dude, you couldn't pay me enough to want to be an ally, an alliance with France.
That's crazy.
really is. But who reached out to who first? It was France. Because France was seeing what the Kaiser was doing. France saw that the Kaiser was screwing up Bismarck's board, and France noticed the opportunity. So what do? Well, they start making friendly contacts. French bankers contact Russia and make offers to invest. French industrialists offer to sell French manufactured goods for cheaper than the Germans were selling. And then slowly these initial contacts began to expand. Naval exchanges start happening. French naval officers go and serve time on Russian Navy ships. Russian naval officers serve on French ships. Russian army officers go train with the French army. French army officers go train with the Russian army. And before long, both sides basically say, you know something? Both of us have a mutual adversary. Germany. So why don't we make a deal? In 1894, they make an alliance. If France attacked by either Germany or Italy, Russia attacks Germany. If Russia attacked by either Germany or Austria, then France attacks Germany.
So this is how the World War started. Someone probably just attacks somebody else.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm laying you out all the metrics on how it all played out. This was huge because, where's the map? Crap! Where's the map? Where's the map? Give me a map. Give me a map. Give me a map. No, god damn it, hold on. Where's the map? Where's the map? There's gotta be a map in here somewhere. Oh, I gotta go all the way back. Oh, Lemanic is slacking with updates of the images. The map should, like, read my mind. No, not that map. That map! Okay, look at this now. So now Germany is the bad guy. Germany is going to get attacked if Russia goes to war with either, or France goes to war with either. Germany is going to get attacked by the other, which means a two-front war. There has never been a situation where a nation has been able to win a two-front war all by itself. What are they? They're fucked. I know, Emmanuel, jeez. Here I was, thought we were like all saintly and stuff. All right, what time is it? Got one more mistake. We got this down, right? Went all the way back. All right, one more mistake. And this was the mother of them all. England. Good?
Yeah, I'm good.
England, which was not paying attention to anything because it was worried about its global empire, suddenly had to worry about a German navy, which did not exist. Why? Well, because of a book. In 1890, U.S. naval historian Admiral Alfred Mahan would publish a book, Influence of Sea Power on History. This book was the most influential book ever written on naval strategy. And if anybody that you know ever goes to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, they study this book. Mahan essentially argues that sea power is the deciding factor in what makes a nation a great nation. If you can control the seas, then essentially you can impose your will upon weaker nations. So, to have naval power, you must have a vast fleet. Now, by the way, Bismarck viewed making a navy as a boondoggle. A boondoggle. A waste of money. You know how much it costs to build a battleship? Or a destroyer? Or a cruiser?
50 million.
Way more than that. And you know what happens to ships, particularly if you try using them in military situations? They get destroyed and they sink. So what happens to all that money? It's gone. So Bismarck never contemplated making a navy. Instead, he utilized a strategy known as commerce raiding. Commerce raiding? Competition among businesses. So he would allow a German business to go somewhere globally and allow a German business to make a treaty or a contract agreement with another country. Because if something happened, it would be the German company that would have to buy the ship, and the German company would suffer the loss. Not Germany. Thus, you could have an economic advantage without the military or tax expense. But Mahan inspired the Kaiser. So much so, after he read the book, he literally had his tailors make him a naval uniform, giving him the highest rank in the Imperial Navy, and he had a portrait made. And then he started ordering the parliament raise taxes, build him a fleet. Why? He now begins declaring his intentions on competing with the British Empire. That's Grandma. In charge of this new naval policy would be Grand Admiral Alfred von Tirpitz. Tirpitz's strategy was based on creating what was known as a fleet in being. You want to make a trade deal with a country? Don't send in some dude in a suit. Have three of your destroyers sail into the harbor. By flexing your guns, you're essentially going to chase out the competition. Because if France suddenly wants to do business in that port, they're going to be sailing into those German guns. And is this worth triggering a battle? Last point. Tirpitz believed this would not result in a battle with England. The reason being, England had a global army to empire to protect. If England was to attack Germany's fleet, they would lose ships. And then what would happen to their empire? Well, what happened to America beginning in 1776 when England could no longer control us? The Kaiser foolishly believed that simply by building a fleet, he could scare England into allowing him to go anywhere in the world he wanted to. But when we come back, we're going to see it really didn't quite work out that way. So, April 22nd. April 22nd.
Paper.
Have a nice weekend.